Welcome to the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions. My name is Kimberly Jackson, and I'm the Executive Director. We're always honored to do programs in the name of Congressman Bill Young. And tonight we have an amazing program, which you have our wonderful mayors who have graciously agreed to have a thorough and in-depth conversation about the state of our beaches. The Institute has been around for some time. We do forums for the betterment of the Florida college system. This is our third year doing our beach program. I would like to thank our exceptional team who works tirelessly to make these programs occur, and particularly Sam Jenkins for his tireless work with the beach mayors. And we're also grateful just to have the audience here. Barry has been an incredible partner and friend to the Institute since we started. His team at the Pinellas Beaches Chamber has worked tirelessly for many programs with us, and we're so grateful that you always step up when we ask for your support. I'm not going to step onto Al Rochelle, our moderator's toes. He's going to explain the format of the program this evening, and we'd like to get started very quickly. So with that, I welcome Barry and say thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Let's give Kim a hand for all the work that she does at the Institute and her team. So on behalf of the Pinellas Beaches Chamber, I want to thank you for coming out tonight. We have some really wonderful folks for you to hear from. Just a moment ago, Fox 13 asked me why we do this, and I say it's all about transparency. And they asked me what we're going to hear, and I said you're going to have to wait to hear what we're going to hear. But I do hope, just to reiterate what Kim said, because everybody seems to escape these events and runs right to their cars. There's no reason to do so. We have a great reception for you out on the veranda tonight. So please stay and enjoy a beverage with us. And we have our sponsor, Chick-fil-A, has provided the food. So it's all there for you, and we are very, very excited. So let me, without further ado, you won't want to hear any more from me. Less of me is always best. We're going to hear from our mayors and Mr. Rochelle. But let's start with Mayor Koppler. Capper, right? Mayor Love, Mayor Scheer, Mayor Brooks, Mayor Doctor, and Vice Mayor Thompson, correct? Vice Mayor Thompson. So we're going to let Al do the who's, what, and where's. And I just want to thank you all again for coming. If we don't know each other, please let's stay a few minutes and let's solve that problem. I know most of you in the room, but those that don't, we could fix that really, really easily. So I'm looking forward to it. Mr. Rochelle, I'm going to leave it up to you and your capable hands.
All right, thank you.
And you're all set. So thanks for coming, and enjoy the program.
So let me set the stage. The last time we held our State of the Beaches, Sanibel Island and Fort Myers Beach to the south of us had been devastated by Hurricane Irma. And if you'd been there, you'd know the island is not the same as it used to be and will probably never be the same again, despite billions of dollars of restoration work. And we have so many hurricanes in our past, it's kind of hard to keep track of them all. When I was on the air, I covered more than 42 hurricanes. And unless you personally suffered loss, those names really don't mean much. But sometimes when you are doubly stung, they mean a lot. And we won't forget the names of Helene and Milton, probably for the rest of our lives. Only a week and a half apart, Helene, even though its center was about 100 miles offshore as a Category 5, it was the flood maker. The water. Officially, Tampa Bay waters were up at their peak over 9 feet above average in the bay, the highest level recorded since 117 years ago. And I'm not so sure how good the record keeping was back then. The usual places got flooded, but areas that hadn't experienced floodwaters ever also got hit. Now, here are the numbers, and I've just rounded them up from the county and FEMA. More than 29,000 homes in Pinellas County sustained damage, 300 destroyed. Another 1,700 significant damage, 600 plus businesses impacted, some wiped out completely. Then came Milton, as my grand said, saying, not knocking the name, but he said, that's kind of a wimpy name for a storm, isn't it, Grandpa? And I go, no, don't worry about the name. But it landed right on top of us, and it was the windmaker. Sustained winds over 100 miles an hour, gusts to 125 at St. Pete Clearwater Airport. Sarasota was the bullseye of this monster. In Pinellas, 13,000 homes damaged, 500 destroyed, 400 businesses took a hit. And the only thing that prevented what could have been a disaster of cataclysmic proportions, as the Weather Channel always likes to say, because of the wind and the low tide, the bay almost emptied itself out, absorbing most, if not all, of the storm surge. And get this. The guesstimate of the number of trees that were blown down, shredded, ripped apart, over 250,000, creating nearly 1 million cubic yards of debris, which was stacked up near the area where I live, near the waste disposal facility, to a five-story building that covered 3/4 of an acre. But here's a number that's more personal. 13 people lost their lives in Pinellas, and nearly all of them from storm surge. And if you were like me, you heard horrible stories about people having to crawl out of their second-story windows, swimming to a boat that was nearly capsized. This was on Madeira Beach with a friend of ours, and then hunkering down and waiting it out in that partially capsized boat for 6 hours before they were rescued. And the worst part is the beaches got hit the most. These are the most beautiful places to live until. So here's what we're going to talk about with our mayors and vice mayors tonight. We're going to start out with a status report on the state of your community, specifically your community. Then we're going to ask about the biggest challenges you face as mayors moving forward. Then we're going to go to Tallahassee to see what kind of help you're getting from them or you need from our lawmakers. Then we'll talk about economic development and how that may have changed because of the double storms, lessons learned. And then finally, we're going to take some questions that were pre-submitted to me earlier, or if you have a question you'd like to ask, there are cards in the back. Do we have Sam? You get the cards to him. That gentleman right there will get you a card if you have a question, and we'll try to get to as many of them as we can. We won't get them all, but we'll get rocking and rolling as fast as I can. This isn't a debate, so I don't have my watch keeping track of time. Nobody's trying to score points. If there's a word or a phrase or a concept that I don't understand, then you probably don't understand it, so I'll ask them to explain. And we're going to start by going right down the line, which means that each one of you will only have to answer the question first, because otherwise, by the time you get to Tom at the end, he'll go, well, they've said everything, and I just agree with everything you did. So as I will mention the name of the person that leads off in that area, then we'll work down the line from there. So let's get a status report from your community. And Tim, we're going to start with you, then move right down the line.
Hello. Renington Beach was hit like everyone else. And so what we're doing is we got a couple of concerns. One is maintaining the residential and family character of Reddington Beach. A lot of it's very much a family and residential community with virtually no commercial properties. So a lot of people are selling, investors are buying in. So that's one concern. What's going to happen 3-5 years out? What would Reddington Beach look like? So that's one thing that's going on now. What we're doing currently, of course, is the restoring our building of new homes, our elevating homes. There's a couple of groups that are doing that. Some people are repairing the homes from the storm damage. Others are knocking the homes down completely, and we'll build a new elevated home. And then others, there's a group of about 50 residents that have formed their own group, so to say, and they reach out to a contractor to elevate or jack up their homes, and they're in the process of doing that. And then finally for the town itself, looking at repairing the infrastructure. Our parks were damaged, our beach access were damaged. There's some other damage to town facilities that we're working on restoring.
John, same thing with you. Status report.
Hey. I've lived here in Florida for 32 years with my 17 years has been in Treasure Island. And I'll tell you, I've never seen devastation that actually water can do. I mean, it really was. Salt water is devastating. It just wiped out pretty much everybody's assets from the ground up. And then to find out that we're going to get hit a second time, I'll tell you what, back in 2004, you remember the four that crisscrossed the state, the hurricanes that crisscrossed the state? I thought that was about as bad as it could get. And we were living over in Orlando at the time, and we were watching trees fall all the way around our house, and we thought, wow, we won't see this again. Well, we didn't. We saw even worse devastation than what happened in 2004. So let me just talk a little bit about our city. From what I understand, yes, it was about 9 feet. Also, I had heard that the highest point was right here at John's Pass. And so you're talking about 9 feet of water going across, three or four football fields at in many cases, and it just devastated it.
Yep. Okay.
There we go.
Now, I was wondering, he's back there going like this. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. But here's what we saw happen in Treasure Island. We did see all that water
After everything was done, 10% of the residential damage, 10% of the residential damage in Pinellas County is in Treasure Island. Wow. We have less than 1% of the residential population base. So we took it hard. A lot of our structures that we have are we've knocked down several of them already. A lot of the structures were older. They were all at ground level, except for the new city hall that we had. But we lost our safety building completely, which our safety building is our fire department and our police department. We're looking to rebuild those facilities. And we'll talk a little bit more later on about how we hope to still rebuild those facilities. But what we're looking at today is that we are back in business. We are starting to see some normalcy. Almost all of our restaurants and bars are back up and running. We have a number of events that are going to occur on the beach. Matter of fact, this Saturday morning, we're going to have the sports festival, which I think this is going to be our fourth or fifth year, and it brings in thousands of people. So we are starting to feel a bit of, yes, we are back, we're open for business, and yes, we are going to move forward, and we're going to continue to help everybody in Treasure Island until everybody is back to where they need to be.
Okay, great. Anne Marie, make sure you open the mic. Got it.
Good evening, everyone. So I am a Florida born and raised native. I've been in Madeira Beach with my husband for 10 years. We wouldn't live anywhere but here. When the hurricane came, it devastated Madeira Beach. Every single owner and business in our city was affected or damaged in some way. And the story that I like the best is Madeira Beach is 2 miles long and a mile wide. And the day after the storm, when residents started coming back on the island, within a few days, the city had trucks and trailers, and we were out driving around the city delivering bags of ice and cases of water. And the thing that struck me and still strikes me when I think about it is how I watched people drag everything they owned to the road. They lost everything. And they were still smiling. Neighbors were helping neighbors. And they just did what had to be done. And to me, that just tells you who we are in this little town, 2 miles long and a mile wide. Our city has fought to rebuild. Our residents have fought to get back in their homes. One of the most devastating things to notice when you drive our city is the homes that are leveled and tore to the ground because they were substantially damaged. What we had as a little fishing village, a small little town that many people have lived in, homeowners that have been in their houses for over 50 years, never seen a drop of water. The landscape of who we are as a city is changing, whether we like it or not. And it's sad. It's sad to see all the bungalows go away and see that you just know a big house is coming back. But we're working hard, and our businesses are opening. We just had the John's Pass Seafood Festival a few weeks back. This weekend is King of the Beach. Our residents are working hard, and they have wonderful attitudes. And we have a city staff that's working hard to help everybody get back to where we need to be. And I'm pretty proud of that.
Great.
To be a part of it.
Diantha?
I'm from Indian Shores, and we're a very small community as well. We're 2.6 in length. However, we're only like on the other side of Gulf Boulevard, like one condominium or house wide. So we don't have other streets to be that concerned about. We do have some beach cottages that were devastated. But as you go through this situation and everybody you talk to says, well, how did you fare? How did you fare? And I said, if you talk to anybody in this area, everybody on the Barrier Islands has a story. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, and it's interesting in how the town has come together and continuing to do our traditional things after we got the streets cleaned and the houses underway. We've had our St. Patrick's Day Festival, which is a tradition in Indian Shores. Our Homeowners Association is hosting a chili cook-off next week. And we celebrate Memorial Day every year, and that is being put together again and for the citizens of Indian Shores. In other words, we all pull together to continuing to make Indian Shores a great place to live. We were fortunate in some respects in that we were mostly, we're 60% condos and townhouses and only 40% of single family homes or cottages. So we were able to sort of weather the storm a little better than some. There's still some big issues with some of the condos because elevators are a big issue. Some of them weren't because so many elevators were out across the beaches, getting the people in to do the mechanics and getting the parts for it's been a trial. But other than that, I think we've done a pretty good job in Indian Shores. We have our own building department, which really was a great thing to have because our building supervisor hit the road running, getting permits out pretty rapidly. And we also made a few changes to the way we operate in that we had a 10-year look back for substantial damage, and that caused some problems. So the council voted to get rid of the 10-year look back, so that's really helping out some of the owners. We do not and haven't charged for any building permits due to hurricane damage, and we're continuing to do that as well, although it's starting to run down, thank goodness. He's been out doing a lot of inspections. We're almost done with the inspections for that. So we're going forward pretty quickly. I'm very proud of the way Indian Shores has reacted during this time. And like I said, everybody has a story, some of them worse than others, but we're pulling together and we're getting there.
Karen?
Thank you.
So I'm Mayor Love from Gulfport, Florida. We're 3 miles square. We're not on the Gulf. We are on the Boca Ciega Bay. I always like to say that we were hit by 3 hurricanes and a pop-up flood in a matter of 2.5 months. Debbie took out our boats. The day after Debbie, there were 16 boats on our streets. Okay. Then came Helene. Helene took out our homes. We lost 637 homes to flood water, though to varying degrees, so I don't want to say they're all lost permanently. And then Milton took out our trees. And in between there, we also had a pop-up flood. Bear Creek in St. Petersburg overflowed, and because we're used to the water coming from Boca Ciega and going up the streets, but this was different. When the Bear Creek overflowed, we're lower than St. Petersburg, so our streets were just like raging rivers. So we really got hit with a lot in a very short period of time. Our city itself has several properties that are right on the water. Our rec center, our beach, our casino, which I hope all of you have had a chance to come and dance at, our Williams Pier, and our marina. So to most people, it would look like we've not made much progress, but we have. There's so much behind the scenes that has to go on. The engineering and the designing is happening, and we hope to have everything open again, of course. Our properties that are not on the water that were damaged are all up and running. I mean, we had our priorities. We have all of our services are being provided again. I think our city and our staff are doing a really good job on with what we have. When it comes to our businesses, I can think of four of our bars and restaurants that are not open. The rest of them are. Any night you can walk into Gulfport and you're going to find music at least five, six, seven different places. So we are open for business and we're doing well. But, you know, we're not going to be happy until we have everybody back. And then in terms of our homeowners, 637 damage to varying degrees. So right now I would say we have homes that are being razed. In some ways that's really exciting because we actually are razing some of our older bungalows. So I'm very excited. So we have homes that are have been razed. We have homes that are being grazed. We have homes that are, we now, it took a while, but we now you hear all kinds of drills and saws and concrete mixers. We have some new construction already starting. We have lots of repairs being done. And we have homes that are being sold where the people said, I can't do this. You know, some of our aging population says, I can't do this again. I'm leaving.
Tom?
You put me last and it's dull. They got everything that I did. not really, though. We can talk about all the stuff that was damaged and things like that. I think what teased me off the most is I was in the building business most of my life, okay? And I believed to get things done and get them done quick. And I think we need, it's either FEMA, the county, the state, or somebody needs to have plans for these hurricanes that we can take care of things in a expedite them in a, you know, a fast way instead of sitting and waiting for permits for days and days and days, okay? And that's what we're doing. And I've only been mayor for about 3 weeks now. I was on the commission for another couple months. And the reason I took the mayor's thing is I felt that I can help the people, and they need a lot of help, okay? They still need a lot of help, okay? So that is why I'm on up here today, and I hope we can find some help somewhere else too. Thank you.
So let's talk about I'm gonna deviate a little bit from this because I think we all know people that live on the beach. There's a family in our neighborhood. They're still not in their house, and they still don't have permits. They're in Madeira Beach. I'm going to start with you, John. What is the most common call that you get that people are really ticked about? Besides, and I know permitting has got to be one of them.
Well, clearly, permitting is the number one. And, you know, we're working tirelessly to get everything out to our folks. A lot of the issues, though, is that there's a lot of regulations and a lot of paperwork when it comes to FEMA. And when it comes to just permitting in general, there's a lot of paperwork. So even if, you know, there wasn't a storm and you wanted to go and replace your kitchen, there's a lot of work to be done and a lot of paperwork and everything to be signed off on. And so we're moving forward in a couple of different ways. We had our own staff, and we started to see everything, you know, build. The permits were building. So what's called a mission when you talk about the state or the government, a mission. And a mission means that you're asking for help for a specific need. It could be a permit tech. It could be an inspector. It could be a floodplain manager. It could be whatever. So we were at the very beginning, and we asked quickly for all the different missions that we could get. And at that time, FEMA was paying for all of them as well. Well, we found out that even with the state missions, you know, all the help coming from the state and the county, that we needed more help. So we actually went out to a private engineering firm and brought in about 12 folks from a private engineering firm that helped us move things along. Now, that didn't happen until about January. And sure. So we were already months in, and everything was still backing up. Now we have got, we've already issued about 1,900 permits, and we're moving very rapidly to try and wrap everything up. The biggest problem now that we have is that the folks that are still working with their insurance companies, there are folks that still haven't come down from up north to their properties. There's people that are out of the country, and we need to get all of those wrapped up. And so that's going to be a real challenge to get all of those because, you know, things are beginning to shut down. And when I say that, FEMA now has pretty much left. They paid for everything until April 8th, and then they're gone. It was the 1206 fund. and that is no longer there. So everything that we're doing is basically our dollars. And that's for everybody in Florida for the hurricane damage. And that's devastating to us because we're not a big city. We don't have lots of reserves, and all of a sudden we're seeing that the money is disappearing very rapidly. You know, DeSantis and the state of Florida has taken a page out of Trump's book on the Doge. And so what we're seeing is that some of the things that we thought that the state was going to help us on and reimburse us for, they're not in the budget. So we're a little bit concerned there. And
WMTBLP, St. Petersburg.
Lost our fire department, our police department facility. We lost our public works facility. We lost even at our parks. We saw that we lost several pavilions and our maintenance sheds. We took it hard. We lost a lot of bricks and mortar. And unfortunately, the FEMA and the state do not like to reimburse for bricks and mortar. They like to do a lot of things, but so we're working right now to see how we can get more grant money, and that's one of the big things that that we're working on. We went down to Lee County. We went down to Sanibel Island. We asked, you know, what did you do? How could you do it? Can you give it to us? And I'll tell you, we actually learned quite a bit. And so now what we're looking for is grant money. And it needs to, just on a safety building, which is our police and fire department, the cost is $12 million to rebuild. And what we're trying to do is to work with the legislature. We still have some time because there's reconciliation going between the House and the Senate. But we're hoping that that they will give us $6 million matching, and we will match our $6 million. But those are the type of things that you don't even think about. Right now, our police department and fire department, they are in trailers right next to the city hall. And they have been in trailers now for 5.5 months. And we don't know exactly, you know, even to build a new safety building is going to take a minimum of about 18 to 24 months. So we're trying to work hard, but I'll tell you what, the spirit in Treasure Island is bar none. We are the best. Neighbors helping neighbors, and we're working tirelessly to get back to normalcy.
Anne-Marie, are you experiencing the same kind of problems then?
So pretty much, but if you asked me, the number one phone calls that I received in September, October, November, December, it was debris. Nobody was calling for a permit. They just wanted the debris removed. Then in January, it became permits. And to give some perspective, in the city of Madeira Beach, we issued more permits in the first 2 months of this year than we would issue in an entire year. And when you think about that, I mean, that gives you some perspective of the enormity of permits that are being issued. But a couple things I want to touch on that you said. The 1206 fund, something that I wasn't aware of until I went to a meeting with FDEM's Guthrie, the Florida Department of Emergency Management Director, Mr. Guthrie. He had reached out to all of the city managers and city building officials on the Barrier Islands that had been damaged because he wanted to fight to get the 1206 funds extended and funded by the state of Florida. And the sad day was nobody showed up for the meeting. And it wasn't mayors and it wasn't commissioners that were asked to go. It was other people who actually make paychecks working for the municipalities. And that's something that I really think we should pay close attention to, which isn't easy because they're on meetings that we don't participate in.
Very briefly, a 1206 fund. What is a 1206? Where do the numbers 1206 come from?
It's the money that FEMA, that we use to pay for the people who came in and helped with the permitting, helped with the inspections, that sort of stuff. So it was the help. When that money ran out, there was no more money. So all of the help that we had coming from FEMA and from through the state disappeared. Okay. And if you're not going to, I mean, we spend a lot of time paying attention to what's going on in Tallahassee for different bills and things like that. You really got to pay a lot of attention to these types of things because this is more important to us than anything going on. We need the money. The money is needed not just by Madeira, but by every municipality that's trying to overcome the challenges of permitting. I can tell you that in our city, although we had Tidal Basin doing inspections, we cross-checked everything they did, and we utilized our residents to make that happen. We got our residents to upload photographs of their damage in their homes so that when the Tidal Basin data came in, we had that as a comparison so that homes didn't get substantially damaged if they weren't. I think that we need to be more collaborative together in the issues and how each municipality overcomes something, because we also took note from Charlotte and Lee County, and we were, or Cape Coral, and we were able to not make some of the mistakes they made because we listened to their challenges. And if you go down there now, they're still recovering. They're still not done rebuilding. So when I drive up and down the beach, as much as it is devastating, we are so far ahead of them because of them.
Okay, good way to put it. Diantha, same thing with you.
I forgot my microphone. One of the reasons that we do see delay is of the insurance companies, especially I think for the condominiums and townhouses, and they had a special issue in that FEMA considered them commercial buildings as opposed to a single house. Even though it's your home, they were considering them a commercial building. So we kind of had to fight that to get money, and the insurance has taken a long time before they come and make a decision. So many people have to go and get a private negotiator for the insurance estimator.
Sure.
So that also delayed things for applying for the permits. We did not have a big problem issuing the permits, and they went out quickly. But that was an issue. And the big issue, which is the reason why the council decided to get rid of the rollback, was because that caused a problem with the 50%, 49%, whichever rule they were using at the time. And that caused a problem in that if they had already spent money through the 10 years, there wasn't a space for them to be able to do a full repair on their home. And that caused some of the homes to be substantially damaged and have to be torn down. We do not have a lot of that in Indian Shores, but we do have some.
Right.
And as I spoke before, I'm hearing a lot about the elevator issue and some tall buildings that do not have elevators, and the age of our population, that is a big problem.
Yeah.
Mostly, we had our debris cleaned up pretty quickly. One of the issues, we said, okay, you have to have everything out by such and such a time. We're only going to pick it up two times, or we're only going to pick it up three times. We had to keep on increasing that because people would continually to put things out on the curb and created quite a mess for a while till we got it all cleaned up and we could finally stop that. Sand is still an issue in some areas. Again, condo, community living is a little different issue than single homes. So we have some different issues than a lot of the places.
Right. Karen, let me go to you and try to get as many people talking as we can about this.
Yeah, no problem. So you asked what's the number one phone call I get? For sure it's permits. It's 100 to 1, so it's permits. So for us, again, we're a small city, therefore we're staffed. We have a small staff. All right. And our city council and our building department took the position that they could not issue any permits without substantial damage letters. Okay. I know not everybody agrees with that, but that was the position that our council and our department took. Well, of course, we didn't have enough people to do all the substantial damage letters, so we went to the county, and then from the county, we were sent to Florida, and we were the lucky lotto winners that got Tidal Basin. Tidal Basin did a terrible job, as far as I'm concerned. They were telling us that their process was slow because they were checking and cross-checking. That was not the case. We had many, many, many letters that were so totally inappropriate. I mean, they didn't even have the construction of the house correct. So we had a lot of major issues with Tidal Basin. So our homeowners, who were really on the ball and sharp and went ahead and got their permits in right away, they, in their mind, they've had to wait 4, 5, 6 months for permits. But in many cases, it's because they got their requests, their applications for permits in long before we ever got the substantial damage letters. Okay. And then when the substantial damage letters came out, we had homeowners saying, but I took in 2 feet of water and they're getting substantial damage letters 75%. So that then meant that we had to hire staff. And we were given some staff through the state, and we had to go back and recheck all these letters. So right now, we still have plenty of people that don't have permits, but we've had a huge success. I don't want to say in the last 30 days, because that would look like I'm trying to take credit for it, and it's not. It's just been a cumulative. So I'm going to say the last 6 to 7 weeks, we've had some major progress in our city. But we were really backlogged because of what happened with Tidal Basin. Also, people got their permits in, and then in December, our planning department tells us that FEMA came out with some new guidelines. So people who thought they had their permits in and they were ready to go, now they were told, no, now you have to do this, this, and this. And so they did it promptly and thought they held their position in line, but they didn't. They went to the bottom of the barrel. So it's been difficult, but I know as of today, we have one person that we found today that has not received a substantial damage letter. Besides that, we are done with substantial damage letters. I know we've gotten a lot of permits out, but not everybody has permits. But fortunately, more and more people are calling me, and sometimes it's a matter of they also, because we were maybe later than some people, we are now fighting for the same contractors. Yeah. And sometimes the contractors maybe told our homeowner, oh, I put in your permit 6 weeks ago. And when we try and do some back leg work for them, we're finding out, no, your contractor requested a permit 2 weeks ago. So okay. We've been behind the game, I feel, but I also feel like substantial changes. And there's nothing like getting up on a Saturday morning and hearing buzzsaws everywhere.
Yeah. Tom, you were an inspector, so you, how would you?
Well, I wasn't an inspector. I was a builder.
A builder. How would you slim down the process?
Yeah. First of all, I agree. Most of the stuff here at Reddington Shores went through the same thing. Okay, and Reddington Beach, we have the same building department. Okay, and we all try to work together. My thing is, I've lived in Florida since 1982. Okay. I've seen a lot of hurricanes. Okay. And I cannot understand why there's not a program that we can follow to get things moving a heck of a lot faster. Okay. And it's just like a building permit. You wonder why some of the builders don't want to come in here to get a permit for this, because they got to sit and wait forever, and they got to come in and they got to detail each one of their costs. Okay. And I don't know if anybody in here is a builder or not, but you give a quote out. You don't have to tell them your drywall is X amount of dollars. This is X amount. Well, that's one of FEMA's rules, okay? And that screws it up, because they go in, then they got to wait. They got to go back and do it again. And our biggest problem is, it seems like every time you turn around, I'd get a phone call, and this guy says, well, I went down to get my permit, and they lost something. I don't know how many times that happened. I got to tell you this one story. It's pretty sad. This just happened the other day. Guy on 175th Terrace, okay? He has a triplex, okay? He's lived there for 40-some years. He gets a letter from the city, from our building inspectors, that He's only a twinplex. He's not a triplex, okay? Because he's got two units up, one unit down, okay? But they're saying that is illegal. It's not a triplex. He's paid taxes for it for 40-some years.
Oh, gosh.
He's got 4 meters on the place, 3 meters for the apartments, and 1 meter for the house meter. And he can't get a permit. What's the guy supposed to do? He's an elderly gentleman. That's where he lived. You know, so they're pushing him out. It's just things like that, I think, bugged the hell out of me. And it just, that's why I became mayor for a short period of time. And I want to try to do something to speed the system up.
Right.
Thank you.
Tim?
Yeah, certainly we're with Reddington Shores and also Mayor Love. Very similar situation with Toutle Basin. But I'll just give you one example of some of the regulations that we have to follow. So the substantial damage letter, which was done by Toutle Basin, does an evaluation of a flooded house as to is it how much damage was done based to the structure value. Is that above or below 50%? Right, a very simple line item. X amount of dollars, is that above or below 50% of the value of the structure, right? So that letter comes out. Over 90% of them are wrong. Some of them horrendously wrong. So now the resident has to do an appeal. They can't get a permit because they're above 50%. So they do an appeal. Now the building department does the same evaluation, and in over 99% of the cases, the appeal comes in below 50%. So now the resident can get a permit. So they go and turn in their permit. Guess what happens next? Part of the permit process that FEMA requires is floodplain review. So now the contractor has to turn in on spending $10,000 for drywall, $25,000 for labor, $45 for screws. All of those items has to be detailed. That, again, is compared to the 50% value of the structure above or below before a permit can be issued. Three times the same evaluation. And that's just one example of the inefficiencies that we are facing from the federal government and in smaller part the Florida Building Code. But those inefficiencies does drive up the time that it takes a building department personnel to issue a permit before a permit can be issued.
So, Anne-Marie, I'm going to start with you. Fix it. What? Because here is the reality. How many? But we, as citizens, all think that you guys and gals can fix it. So you say there's no blueprint on how to get it to help? You got anybody in Tallahassee you could go to and say, hey, I'll volunteer to put together a blueprint on how this gets done?
So the Florida Department of Emergency Management, they came to Pinellas County and they invited all of the mayors on the barrier islands to come. And those of us that could go went. It was an extremely good open forum conversation in being able to listen to where they are coming from and what they would like to see. I'm of the opinion, based off of that meeting, that FEMA does want to change to and understands the pains of the city. The reason they formed the meeting and invited the mayors is they didn't want the perspective of the city manager that runs the day-to-days. They didn't want the perspective of the building official who's, you know, all about the numbers. They wanted to hear from the people who hear from the people. And that's who we are. We can't make changes. We can advocate for it. We can support our community. But the change has to be made at the federal and state level. I can just say this. When Helene hit the day after Helene hit, and we as a city started working on what are we going to do? This is before FEMA came in and said, whoa, you got to stop because you can't do that. That doesn't meet our criteria. Our staff went out, as well as the Mike Twitty, the property appraiser. They were out, and they were taking pictures of homes, and they were doing inspections. So we did inspections for several days until we were told you had to stop. Had our professional staff, who's licensed, they've gone to school to be engineers, building officials, had they been able to move us from flooded muck and gut to permits and people back in their homes, we would have been done in December.
Oh, boy.
Because our building official he's our building official. He and our floodplain engineer could go out and look at a home and say, that home is not 50% damaged. There's no foundation damage. There's no this, there's no that. And they could then have allowed the normal permit process that is tied to dollars, because there are dollars tied to permitting, because the 50% rule applies whether we have a storm or we're just going to remodel our homes. That's a Florida building code. We're not getting rid of that, I don't think, likely. So, but the issue in the permitting is the bureaucracy of FEMA. Dot all your I's, cross all your T's, make sure you don't make a mistake, because if you do, we're going to punish you. And I can tell you that when I left that meeting that day with Director Hamilton, he was committed to getting rid of the red tape. So I'm hopeful, very hopeful, that that will continue. And that's the only way that you're ever going to see a storm pass through and residents be made whole, is to put it back in the hands of the community, because the federal government is too bureaucratic and they have no business coming into a city and telling a licensed building official and a licensed engineer that they can't make the determination of whether a property is 50% damaged or not.
Do you all agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, Tom?
Yeah, one thing about holding up all the details that they go through. Here's a good one. Okay, the people that are over the 50, it's substantial damage, they can get an appraiser and come back in and fight it, okay? So what happens is that appraisal goes out there, and he brought the thing up enough that they can go ahead and fix their building. He sends his paperwork in. It takes the building department another week to even study the appraisal. They shouldn't have to study that appraiser. That appraiser is a licensed appraiser in the state of Florida. And if he doesn't know what he's doing, then he's the one that's going to get in trouble. If that appraiser comes in that says it's worth $500,000, that's what they should mark down and go with it. No, they got to go through details.
So can I rebuttal on that?
Yeah,
just a little?
Keep going.
So, and I only know the experience from our staff.
Right.
But our staff, when we first started the software program that we were working in, that was sanctioned by FEMA, but we ended up having to use a different software, actually allowed staff to go in and look at the home and determine that that house had a valuation of $50,000 because they built it 50 years ago and had lived in it. It never sold, and could look at the home and use the calculations to increase the value of the property without having an ACV appraisal. And we were doing that. And we did that on several properties and were able to increase the value of the home respectively to what would be in line with the professional opinion, and then take into account the amount of work that needed to be done and be able to say this house can be fixed for well under the 50%. And if you got a house that is over 50%, there's structural something. And you really don't want to live in that house. You don't want to live in a house that doesn't get the wiring repaired, that's been sunk under the salt water, where the corrosion is going to eat up through the wiring, and you're going to wake up with a fire in your home. Nobody wants that. But I think that there were tools that we had at our disposal that FEMA didn't allow us to use because it didn't meet their criteria. But it met the criteria of a safe home that would meet the 50% and would follow the Florida Building Code. And who better knows how to recover from a hurricane in the state of Florida than the state of Florida?
Right. So let's continue this conversation. The insurance industry, I mean, it's a mess. I don't know how to describe it any other way. And it seems that when talking to people that had a lot of damage and stuff, getting them to agree to what was damaged and what wasn't, I mean, it was always a fight. We had tree damage, and God help you if the tree, if you have 10 100-year-old oaks that fall on your property, they don't cover it unless one of them, a branch, hits the house. And then if the branch hits the house, you better pray the branch hits the house, because then the insurance company will pay for that. Is anybody, even in your cities, looking at this whole picture and going, something has got to change? Otherwise, we're not going to be able to afford to live here anymore. Diantha?
Yeah, that was what I was speaking to, with having to go out to a public adjuster because the insurance company really underrated a lot of the properties. So in order to get what you needed to get your place replaced or fixed, you had to get a public adjuster to get the money, the value up on your property. And that's happened to a lot of the places in Indian Shores. So I'm blaming the insurance company. You can't accept their first offer. The insurance company, you've paid thousands for years into insurance.
Right.
But when it came time for getting insurance money, it was no. So, and that also held up getting repairs to places because you had to go get a public adjuster. Then the public adjuster had to, talk to the insurance company and come to, before you could even go out and look for, and get your permits because you have a certain amount of time that you have to start work after you get the permit.
Now, is it more difficult for a homeowner to get insurance settled out of this other than like the city of Treasure Island when you go, hey, it's one of our public buildings that we use for safety and those kind of things? Is it easier to get a settlement out of insurance companies there, or do they just stick it to the homeowners? If you're an insurance agent, I apologize.
I know this guy here.
It's not the insurance agency, okay?
Okay.
It's not
okay.
The agent.
Don't blame it on them.
No, I think that, we're still dealing with on all of our buildings and everything there for the city. We're still dealing on it. We've got some insurance has been paid out, but most of it has not. And a lot of the people that we're trying to call out to, for permit, why haven't you come in for permitting? We're trying to get everybody in. The most reliable thing that they say is, well, our insurance company isn't ready for us to settle yet. And so they're trying to figure it out. I'll tell you what, though, on the automobiles, I don't know. I've heard that the automobiles, they paid like that.
Right. That was quick.
Yeah. But when it came to the structures and the household possessions and all of that, depending on which company you had, it's been taking a long time.
So what happens because inevitably the hurricane clock never stops? It's like getting older, your hair falling out, it keeps falling out, you just keep getting older, more wrinkles. The hurricane season is here, and I would think that with a lot of these properties gutted out and still exposed, if we get a hurricane, an early hurricane in June or July, all of that work is going to be gone again. How do you prepare for that? Mentally, emotionally.
You don't. I'll tell you what. The one thing that I have been impressed with is Kevin Guthrie, who is the Florida Department of Emergency Management, and Ron DeSantis. They have been pretty practical on many items. I'll tell you just one quick little story about why we should be doing this at a state level and not at a government level. When we got hit by Helene and the water came up and everything else, and all of a sudden the next day everybody's dragging everything to the street, all of a sudden we hear, that there's another one coming.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what Kevin Guthrie and Ron DeSantis did is probably save a lot of lives as well as a lot of the structures that are out there. When they realized that here coming within, nine, 10 days, whatever it was, they requested, they didn't request, they basically ordered every truck in the state of Florida, all of their big dump trucks and semi dump trucks and everything else to get to Pinellas County and get everything out of there and to the dumps. And had that not happened, there would have been just mass injuries and, flying items going, everywhere. And, but that was because at the state level, they were able to coordinate everything and get it done. If we would have had to go through FEMA to try and do any of that, it would have never worked. Never worked.
Let's talk about economic development now. It's kind of, it's almost, I don't even know how to recover, but this is what you guys are paid to do and ladies are paid to do. How do you go ahead with even thinking about economic development when, number one, you've probably lost some residents who are saying, I'll be danged if I'm going to live in Florida one more month. When you have a lot of these businesses that were small businesses, we call them the mom and pops. I love the mom and pops. There's more character in mom and pops than
the Domses are. You know, I'm not knocking them. But so how do you even look at economic development, or can you, until all these other problems are fixed? And I'll just start with you, Tim, and we'll work down the line.
Great question, right? So Redington Beach is a little different in that regard. We got one commercial property. So our economic development is really looking at, one, we look to hire local contractors, local construction firms. Certainly you get the inundation of everyone from all over the country who wanted to help. But we made a decision to help local businesses. And so that's what we did, not only for our debris removal, but also for our repairing of our infrastructure. And we're strongly encouraging our residents to use local for their repairing of their houses or building of their houses. You know, that's what we're doing in terms of helping the local economy.
Yeah. Ms. Love, I'm going to jump down to you on that question.
So Gulfport's small, and we don't have a lot of open land, okay? But our waterfront district is very developed, and we bring in good crowds all the time. I think in terms of the city, the best thing that our city can do is continue to promote the fact that most everything is open. But mostly the job of the city and our staff right now is to work diligently to get our waterfront amenities up and running. So right now our rec center is still closed. Our casino is closed, and I don't see that being open anytime in the near future, though it will reopen. Our pier is closed, and our marina is closed. So I think in terms of what the city needs to be doing is everything they can to get those up and running, because that brings a lot of money back into our city. Independent of that, I'm really thrilled with the volunteers and the community advocacy in our city. So we have two relatively new groups in our city. One is called Fusion 49, and Fusion 49 is working hand-in-hand with the city of St. Petersburg to do some redevelopment along the 49th Street corridor. So there's a lot of mom and pops there, but they probably could do better if we had a little bit slower traffic and working along that whole corridor. So they are working independent of the city with the support of St. Petersburg. St. Petersburg and Gulfport are working together to bring in some traffic calming ideas, right, and methods. So that's moving along really well. I'm really proud to see they've come a long way in the last 12 months. And then we have another new group in our community that are calling themselves the Midtown Collective Group. And they are not focusing on downtown Gulfport. They are focusing on our other major roads. And they are helping a lot of other businesses, small mom and pops, because that's who we are, get up and running. And I'm really pleased to see the progress that they're making as well.
Mm-hmm. So what are you doing? And I want to answer from all of you. What are you doing prepared for this hurricane season? I mean, people could basically say, hey, the beaches have sand, so they'll eventually correct themselves, or we can take care of them easier because there's not as much, in quotes, debris. But when you see, I'm just thinking up of in Clearwater on Island Estates, I mean, we have friends that live out there. You were driving down a road and you couldn't see the houses because the garbage was stacked 10, 15, 20 feet in the air.
So I can tell you that the one thing I really want to brag, Gulfport did a fantastic job. We hired two different companies to get the debris out. So we did a really good job. And then we have local volunteer groups that work hand in hand with Keep Pinellas Beautiful. And like, we'll be cleaning up one of our residential neighborhoods this Saturday. I'm not talking about the big debris now. I'm talking the machines came in and took out the big debris, but we still have all the pieces of tiles and glass and photo albums, you know, the little things. We're going to be cleaning that up. So that's really good. Also, we have the hurricane preparedness meeting is May 29th, and that is a fantastic meeting. All are welcome. That happens at our Catherine Hickman Theater. And they just give us every resource that you should have on the front end in terms of how to prepare your home, to prepare your car, to prepare your business, to prepare yourself mentally, food. I mean, that first year after I went to that seminar, I'm telling you, I had the kayak in the living room because that's how we were going to escape. And I had the rafts in the sunroom because that's where we were going to put the dogs. And we had staged a ladder and an axe. I mean, they prepare you. So I'm really proud that we're doing that again May 29th. And then I've organized a volunteer group, strictly volunteer group, that's going to piggyback on that. And I have the survivors of the actual storms are writing a very similar booklet to the hurricane preparedness called Post-Storm Recovery. So it's not at a government level. It's not at a state or a county level. It's Gulfport people writing for our future generations of folks in Gulfport and telling them, what did they do to survive the first hour, the first day? What did they take photos of? What did they do that and they now realize was a waste of time? What did they do that really saved their butt? And what do they wish that they had known then what they know now?
That's great. So I'm curious in the audience again. So how many of you are going to prepare for this hurricane season different than you did last year? One of the things that we got stuck in because of the dire warning from the mayors, they both came on and said, you're all going to die if you stay here. They did. Jane Castor said it. And you also had our mayor in Pinellas County and the commission said that. 12.5 hours to get to Jacksonville. I didn't realize that you can drive 60 miles an hour on the shoulders with three other lanes in between you. And that's what people are doing. So in terms of, and this can sound a stupid way to say it, but I'm going to say anyway, did we really make any mistakes that now looking back and we go, geez, why didn't we do that different? And that's not to point a finger at you, but just to be very critical after action report. What could we have done different? What could we have done better?
The one thing we are doing is a lot of the cities did do it. They didn't charge for their building permits. Okay. Reddington Shores did. Okay. And we're having a meeting coming up next week, matter of fact, to try to change that. Any emergencies, I don't care what it is, you know, that they don't have to pay for permits. So that helps there. Mm-hmm.
Karen, you're going to say something.
Yeah, and I was going to address it more in terms of we being the residents as opposed to the city.
Okay.
There were too many people that were in evacuation zones that did not get out. And I just think that is just intolerable, and I'm going to yell and scream bloody murder the next time we have an mandatory evacuation in Zone A and the people don't leave. And I personally am absolutely shocked how many cars the insurance company agreed to replace for folks that were in a mandatory evacuation. They shouldn't have been there. Their cars shouldn't have been there. They could have taken them to higher ground. So I feel like I know the residents of Gulfport are traumatized, as probably all of you all, and I don't think anyone's going to take it quite so lackadaisical this year as they did in last year.
I probably disagree with that, because after Helene, the people who evacuated were angry that they couldn't come home. Oh. They were so angry that they couldn't get back across the bridge to get to their houses to see what they had or didn't have, to get it opened up. But what they didn't understand, because you couldn't if you weren't here, is there were 5 feet of sand up and down Gulf Boulevard. There were power lines all over the place. There was, if you could even drive across the bridge, it wasn't safe to walk. So I think that, and if you stayed, you were the people being carted off in the high water vehicles the next day who were scared out of their mind because they stayed. But the ones that didn't stay don't have that fear, but they have that, and they're holding that anger that they couldn't get back and get to their properties. If they could have just got back, they could have opened the doors. They could have swept out the muck. They could have saved something. And I worry about those people, because we can, if any of us can sit here and say there's nothing we should have done different, we've been asleep at the wheel. There's always a better way. And you learn the better way because you go through the motions of the process. But I fear for the people who left, that if we were to get another Milton or another Helene and we took a direct hit, they're not going to leave. And for all the wrong reasons. And that, to me, is more scary than did we get the debris right? Did we get the permits right? That's lives. Mm-hmm.
So from the standpoint of our... Oh, go ahead. You're going to say something.
Yeah, I was. We also have a hurricane awareness event, and maybe we should be adding some of the people that I've talked to that stayed for Helene and were scared out of their wits. And not only that, even days after, if they were in one of our condominiums, they couldn't leave. They couldn't get down the steps. The elevators were out. They were some of the elderly. I had a friend that was not well. And on the other hand, Helene scared the people who stayed, and they evacuated for Milton. So I kind of disagree with you, but our police force does emphasize if the winds get to a certain, 35 miles per hour as the hurricane's coming in, they're telling everybody, we're not going to come and rescue you because we can't risk the lives of our police force. The fire trucks can't get over. They won't come over either. And maybe if during our hurricane awareness that we have a couple of those citizens come and talk to the audience, because we generally do have a fairly good group of people that come to our hurricane awareness. We have one every single year, so which I think is very important. You can always hear that information again, that about the weather, about what causes it, what happens. But I think experienced people coming and talking might help to scare to let them know how horrible it was. And just because you evacuate, and just about the trees coming down, I did evacuate up to St. Leo's, and a tree came down and hit my car and totaled it. So go.
That's karma. That's the name of that. So one of the things that we haven't talked about, but we have inadvertently, is the whole money issue. Is it realistic to believe that our governments can make us, and insurance companies can make us whole again? Because isn't that kind of what we all think in the back of our heads, maybe just even though it doesn't make sense, think that, well, you know, apart from all of the items that you wanted to take in the car to Jacksonville, and then you said, I can't make up my mind, so we took nothing and did fine. But any response to that?
Dream. Government, not going to, you know, it's an old saying, is God helps those who help yourself. And a lot of people, like she's saying, wouldn't evacuate, they should have evacuated. You know, we lost a few because of that.
So I didn't get to answer the insurance question earlier, but I will say that I have not received one phone call in Gulfport from anybody wanting to tell me their disappointments with the insurance company. I haven't.
Oh.
I'm just saying maybe they're in 23 days, they just haven't gotten around to it. But I have not gotten any of those complaints yet about insurance companies. On the other end, I've had quite a few of my friends tell me that the insurance companies did right by them and they did quick by them compared to my permitting department, okay? So I kind of heard it a little bit differently. But when you say, will they be made whole? I think, depending on the age of the people, you know, financially they could recover, but I'm also have great concerns about the mentally. So many people were so traumatized by this, and I can see it, and I can see the folks in my town who are starting to make improvement now. They're almost like shell-shocked. It's been such a long, hard road. People telling me stories that they've lived in seven locations over the last 7 months. I'm concerned about if they'll ever be made whole mentally and emotionally again.
Will city governments have to increase, or can they increase their budgets to cover some of this stuff?
If you increase, you have to increase your taxes.
That's why I'm asking.
So it's, I think a better...
Should we expect that?
Well, we're not.
Do this again. we are not an insurance company. The cities are not an insurance company. Of course, you know, in our Constitution, we need to do everything that we can to keep our residents safe. But yeah, we're not a bank. We're not an insurance company. We're fighting, you know, the same issues with losing all of our buildings and everything else as any homeowner would. And, you know, you're never going to be made completely whole. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we all have lost, you know, whether you had your garage stuffed with all your possessions, you know, that you didn't want to have in the house. And I think that that's important to realize, that even the insurance companies, they're not going to make any money if they make everybody whole. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you've got a lamp that you've had for 10 years and you spend $100 on it, you're probably not going to get $100 from the insurance company.
Right. But the city governments have to increase your budget going into next year, knowing what you lost and knowing what you didn't recover? As you, as mayors, will you be asking for increases? Can you ask for increases, or is that all up to the county to decide how you get your money?
No, that's each city is. It goes through the millage rate.
Right.
And that is increased by the individual cities.
Have you heard whether it's going to go up or not?
Well, we're going to decide. So I don't think that we are at a point that we're going to need to increase it. I think that a lot of folks, what they had happened or what they were looking for was a decrease in the millage rate. I don't think that we'll see a decrease in the millage rate either, because we don't know what we've lost, and we don't know exactly how much it's going to cost to repair or replace. I know that we've got from our assessor, Mike Twitty, he basically had done some numbers several months ago, and he basically said that for Treasure Island and most of the islands on the beach, that we are going to lose between 8.5% and 10% of our money that we received last year. Now he's taken a look and said, well, okay, a little bit different. And he said, the good news is it's going to drop to probably about 6.5% loss, not 8.5 to 10, but it's going to happen this year. And that's what the problem is that we're all trying to figure out now, if it's going to happen this year, how much cash flow are we going to have each month? Are we going to be able to actually take the reserves that we have and make us kind of whole for this year? Because everybody, I think everybody probably has a small reserve.
Right.
And our reserve in Treasure Island was $7 million. Well, that's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
But I think that it can keep us and allow us to move forward into the next year. And so I'm feeling pretty optimistic, you know, that with that reserve and with the insurance money that the city is getting, that we should not have to raise our millage rate.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Tom.
The thing that I see or scares me, okay, we've got a lot of houses that are being torn down. So that's tax dollars that we are going to lose, okay? And, it'll grow back up because we have people that are going to build and go up high. The houses are going to get more expensive, so we'll get tax dollars back. But that's going to take years. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. And that's what scares me when we get time for budget. How much did we lose? How many houses did we lose? You know.
So some people I've heard suggested, as much as we like individual residences, you can see in along US 19, the 28,000 new rental units. And some people will say, well, all those rental units and these towers up in Sand Key and stuff, they did really well. So maybe we need more of those and not very many more single-family homes. Maybe we should start thinking along those lines. Is that, have you heard anybody say that? I mean, I've heard it say on the street, but no?
Not in Gulfport.
You won't get that in Reddington Shores.
No. Yeah. We already have.
Not going to happen.
No. In Madeira, we already have two developments that are approved. One of them is very large, that's going to be built right here in the town center. The economic, the development, the jobs, the housing that is going to be in it, it's a hotel with condos. So I don't see personally, from my opinion, I can't even imagine that the Madeira Beach Commission would even consider raising the millage. In a time of crisis and disaster, you're going to burden your homeowners with yet again more that they need to pay. No, that's where the city needs to tighten their belt, sit down and decide what's truly important and where we should be spending our money. And if it is that there was going to be a shortfall, we need to figure that out, not place that on the resident when they're in their worst times right now. And the houses, so in Madeira, we have over 120 homes that have either, well, they've already obtained their demo permits to completely tear their houses down. So we'll have over 120 homes that'll completely tear down, but they're going to rebuild. So the house that was paying $1,000 in property tax is now going to pay $2,000 in property tax. So we may have a year where we need to, okay, let's figure it out. And it's not going to be this budget season. It's going to be the next. But we'll figure that out. And we'll figure it out based on what's best for the community and for the residents. I, for one, will not vote for a millage increase because I think there's too many areas that you can make adjustments and work for the citizens, which is what we do sitting up here.
What kind of grade would you give Pinellas County as far as first responders, sheriff's departments, hospitals, all of those in terms of how they handled both of these hurricanes? And I'll go right down the line because I'm interested in how you would all grade. Jim?
No, we've been very pleased with what Pinellas County has provided us from the sheriff to all the other services. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt.
There we go again. No doubt. They have been on the top of their game. I mean, we had a lot of folks that, you know, we had to, we were bringing in, you know, dogs to search for people and everything else. And as a lot of people didn't understand why we had so many things closed for so long. You know, in Treasure Island, we did have some deaths, you know, that we had, you know, on South Beach area, that the homes actually filled up with sand. And there was no place to go. Oh. But yeah, then when you're taking a look and, you know, you've got, they brought in their troops with their diver dogs and everything else and basically made sure that it was clear and that that there were going to be no surprises. And so I couldn't do anything but pay them compliments.
Mm-hmm. Anne Marie?
Compliments. We contract with the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. They are our policing department in Madeira Beach. I couldn't speak highly enough. We have our own fire department that works with the county, and I had no complaints whatsoever. The resources were plentiful.
Okay. Diantha?
Indian Shores has its own police department, an excellent police department, by the way, which also polices Reddington Shores. And we work cooperatively with the sheriff's office for some of their services. So I'm very pleased with both the sheriff's office and our police department. I couldn't speak more highly of them.
Darren?
Gulfport has their own police department as well as their own fire and rescue department. And we do see sheriff's cars in our community periodically. And I think the cooperation between our city services and the county was excellent.
Yeah. Tom?
Yeah, we deal with Indian Shores Police Department. They are our police, and I'd say they're probably one of the excellent police departments in the whole county. Also, we have a great fire department that we work with Madeira Beach, also with the fire department. So, yeah, I recommend we've got some great service on both ends.
Right.
Can I add one thing? Treasure Island, we have our own police department, but I'll tell you what, we needed a lot more help than just our department for the extension of the time and looting and you name it. We had, there was at least several dozen police departments from around the state that brought in officers to, one, you know, keep people from getting across the bridge when they shouldn't. And but then, yeah, we wanted to make sure that there weren't going to be looters and everything else. And even some of the, to the extent that there are even some of the colleges that have their own police departments.
Oh, yeah.
And they sent vehicles that stayed for months after Helene. So I want to compliment, you know, everybody in the state of Florida that came to Pinellas County and helped everybody out, because that was extremely important. It would never got done any other way.
Great. So we're almost out of time at our program. And first of all, thank you so much for coming and answering my questions and the questions that some of these were submitted earlier. But I want to give you each one of you about a minute to kind of summarize today, how it went, what you're feeling about the future, and maybe just to speak confidently to the residents that may be watching this going, well, here we go again. June's coming around the corner. Here we go. And Tim, I'll start with you and work down the line again.
It's the people of Redington Beach that makes that town special. And in some ways, it's like that little Hallmark town. You know, last weekend we had an Easter egg hunt. The garden club had a plant sale in our town park. A couple of weeks earlier, we had a Mardi Gras event with gumbo and some other events going on for the children to play with. And so I see the people coming back together. Some of them still, a lot of them are not in their homes. They're living somewhere else in the county, but they're coming back to Redington Beach to participate in the townwide events that we are having. And that's what we love about Redington Beach. It's that family oriented community, and I see that vibrancy and that love for each other continuing, and that's what makes me excited to live in Redington Beach and looking forward to the future of the people of they're determined to support each other and to support the town.
John?
Yeah. Treasure Island.
There I go again. Treasure Island is open for business, and that's what we want everybody to realize. You know, that our small businesses are the backbone of our economy, and that's so what we need are our people to come to the beaches. We lost about 40% of our hotel rooms because they were all on the ground level, some of those are getting knocked down, some of them rebuilt. But everything seems to be extremely positive, especially everybody knows the Thunderbird Hotel. Well, we know that it is going to get knocked down, but it is going to get rebuilt, and it is going to be bigger than better. And I'll tell you, I'll put anything on that is going to revitalize the city faster than anything. When they know that they can come in and they can build, and, you know, there's going to be some work on the commission. There's no doubt about it. We're going to have to help them out. But this is going to be the opportunity for us to revitalize Treasure Island.
Okay.
Madeira Beach is open for business. Our beaches are open. We only have one parking lot that's currently closed. So there's places to park. You can come out. Snack Shack's not open yet, but hopefully by the end of the year, it'll be open. People love to go there. The residents are amazing, and I just know that this is going to be a great year. And we're not using the H word.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we don't use the R word. If you don't know what it is, I'm not telling you. You know what the R word is. You don't use the R word and don't say the H word.
Okay. I'm very happy. Diantha?
Indian Shores is doing very well, and we even have a couple new businesses in town that didn't exist there before. We're basically open for business. Our citizens are pulling together, as I said before, and we're doing the best we can to bring everybody together for our traditional affairs.
Great. Karen?
The biggest change in Gulfport is that 4 out of 5 of our council people have been in held office for less than 4 months. Okay, so we have tremendous new energized council. If you didn't know, we did make history. Gulfport, Florida is the first city in the state of Florida to have an all-female council. All 5 members are female. So there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of transparency, a lot of collaboration and compromise going on in our city right now. We're very energized. If you were to be downtown, you would, and not looking at our waterfront, you would not know that we have just been through what we've been through, because people are on our streets and we're doing really well. What excites me the very most is that we have so many young people in our city who are advocating for our city, who are going off in all these different directions and organizing groups to do this and groups to do this. We've got this one whole committee now that's just organizing all of our volunteers, so that next time, because there will be a next time, maybe not my lifetime, but there will be a next time, that we will have volunteers already set up to handle all the different sectors that we needed help in. They should be ready to go immediately. So I'm really excited.
Reddington Shores is also open for business. We have several businesses in Reddington Shores, a lot of restaurants, and I instructed the building department, no red tags on any of the businesses. They are having licensed contractors working on them, and they will be finished and work with them. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, audience. You've been very helpful and very polite, and nobody's running up and down and going crazy. But thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to you, Mayors. You do a great job. I know it's one of those things that's a little bit thankless at times, but it's so good to know that for those of us that call Pinellas our home, that we're going to do what's necessary to take care of each other. Absolutely. Sam, you got a final word or two here.
Well, thank you, Al. Can we give the mayors and Al a round of applause one time? Thank you, Al, for your professionalism. Thank you to the mayors for your service. Thank you all for coming out tonight. We have a couple slides here. The first is Congressman Bill Young. Without him, we wouldn't be here. Without Beverly, we wouldn't be here. We won't try to honor his service and his legacy at every program. So we encourage you to watch the documentary that we produce in-house. It tells a story of his legacy intertwined with the Institute's legacy. We hope you get a chance to watch it. We have social media, Linktree. You can find us, connect with us on social media. And then lastly, thank you again to our partner, Barry, Jill, and the entire chamber. We'll have a reception outside. It's a beautiful night. We hope you can join us for food and drinks and enjoy your evening. Thank you.
All right, thanks to the Institute of Strategic Policy Solutions at St. Petersburg College for allowing us to share tonight's event at the Madeira Beach City Hall. You heard from the various Barrier Islands mayors talking about recovery from Hurricanes Milton and Helene. 3 minutes after 7 o'clock, WMTBLP, St. Petersburg.